A few minutes after completing their last interview of the day, Seth Wilkins and Lowell Huntington, executive producer and star interviewer, respectively, at the Internet Audio Distributor Book Radio, are sitting in their cramped offices in the Book Radio studios in ultra-hip, ultra-trendy Venice, California.
We need more clicks, Lowell. We need many, many more listeners. How are we going to do that, Lowell?
Higher quality programming, more probing questions for our author guests, a more sophisticated mix of cutting-edge ideas and clearly articulated literary themes?
We've got that now, Lowell, and nobody's listening. We are a critical success. Our guests love appearing on your show. After all, you're the only host on the book tour circuit that actually reads what they write.
Well, thank you, Seth. I usually enjoy reading the books as well.
That's all very, very nice. But we need 600,000 impressions, 600,000 page views in the next 30 days, or we're history.
Well, we could do more interviews with authors of history books. I did one about...
You know, Lowell, you're a great interviewer, and you know a lot of things about a lot of stuff. But I'm not sure you always have your finger on the pulse of the Internet listening audience.
Well, then why don't we call a consultant, a plugged-in, wired-up Internet content creation and distribution professional consultant?
That's a very good idea, Lowell. Would you happen to know where we could find one of those?
How about on the Internet?
Cool. Do it. This is Seth Wilkins, president of BookRadio.com. May I please speak with Ms. Winnie Brown? BookRadio.com. We're the number two internet book show. I'd like to talk to her about becoming number one. Yes, I'll hold.
Seth, how are you? Oh, thank you for calling. I'm a big fan of Book Radio. How can we help you?
I'm glad to hear that you're so enthusiastic, Winnie. How can we get a 500,000 more people to feel that way?
Emotions, Seth. Feelings. You know, fear, lust, anger, love, the whole gamut. People want to be involved. They want to be stirred, not shaken.
But most of the books we do are about ideas, not feelings.
Need I say more?
But geez, Winnie, these shows Lowell does for us are so clever, so insightful, so probing, and...
You want to be probing, or do you want to be number one?
Well, number one.
I'll email you the deal paperwork, a bill for this session, and we can get together tomorrow to work out the details for your new format.
See you tomorrow, Winnie.
We got a really good one today, Seth.
Do we, Lowell? Tell me.
Sarah Goldstein, author of Teacher by Day, Thespian by Night.
Yeah, sounds good. What does she do at night as a lesbian?
Thespian, Seth, actor. Actress, of course, actually, but she's very hip, very politically correct, so she calls herself an actor rather than an actress, with its connotations of, you know, like female sexuality and whatnot.
Oh, we couldn't have that now, could we? Female sexuality and whatnot. Might get people excited, make them listen, tell their friends, whatever. I need to talk to you after this show, Lowell, in my office, okay?
Totally okay. I have some things I want to talk over with you, too.
Okay. Good luck with Ms. Lesbian.
Thespian, Seth. Thanks. This is Book Radio. I'm Lowell Huntington, the host. Our guest today is Sarah Goldstein, who's just written Teacher by Day, Thespian by Night. Welcome, Sarah, to Book Radio.
Thanks very much, Lowell. I'm very glad to be here.
By day, where were you a teacher?
Well, I was a substitute, so I ended up teaching in almost every high school in the Los Angeles Unified School District over 3 years.
And the Thespian?
Well, I got around a lot there, too. I was in 22 plays over that same time period.
Until you were spotted in the last one by Rob Silverstein from Creative Artists Agency.
That's right.
And now you're not just the author of Teacher by Day, Thespian by Night, but the female lead in Quentin Tarantino's next film, Urban Decay.
Well, yeah.
Well, you got a better health plan now?
Well, actually, subs in the L.A. Unified School District have pretty good benefits. But yeah, I'm a little more comfortable now.
Could you compare for us teaching, acting in low-budget theater, and being a movie star?
Well, Lowell, I'm not really a movie star. But I think that all three milieu can provide you with a platform for educating, entertaining, even moving the audience. be it high school kids, devotees of small theater, or a mass audience. That's what I try to do anyway.
Well, you did that for me, Sarah. The way you acknowledge the humanity of all your audiences, the way you try to share your own knowledge and experience with them, wherever they are, whoever they are, in the way that best suits their level of receptivity, was very inspiring, very impressive to me.
Thank you, Lowell.
Good show, Lowell.
Thanks. Can we talk about a few new ideas I've got to broaden our base, expand our programming, do some new...
In a second. We have to talk.
Well, right. Let's talk.
I mean, talk about some basic issues.
Like what?
Like the 600,000 impressions we need.
Did you get in touch with the consultant I found for you?
I did. We talked. We met. We decided.
And what did you decide?
That we need a new approach.
And what would that be, Seth?
We need to make the show more lively.
More lively, Seth?
Glitzier. More happening. Sexier.
Ideas not enough for you, Seth? Fascinating discussions of the latest expressions of literary talent, insufficiently alluring to those whom you want to reach?
They're enough for me, Lowell. Winnie doesn't think they're enough for the audience we need to attract.
Winnie? Has the plugged-in, wired-up internet content creation and distribution professional consultant I suggested we engage become Winnie?
Not that it's any of your business, but yes, she has, and we both think we need a new host with a more with-it attitude to our programming.
No problem, you Philistine twerp. Just send me my last check from all the cash you're going to be making from interviewing these porn stars with ghostwritten books. Bye, Seth.
Bye, Lowell, and good luck. Porn stars. Yeah.
You're asking me to do what, Lowell?
Become my co-host, Sarah. Join me on Talking Books, and we'll show Seth that quality programming is good business.
But I'm an actor, a film actor now, Lowell. My job's to entertain people, not educate them. You're good at that. I know from how you interviewed me. I don't think you need my help.
But I do. It's Beauty and the Beast, Sarah. I need your glamour to balance my overly intense intellectuality and occasional verbosity and pomposity. We could be the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers of the internet, Sarah.
Let me think about it, Lowell, okay? I'll email you this afternoon, all right?
Yeah, okay.
I think you've got it now, Seth. We're starting off next week with an interview of the author of The Making of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Issue. You've made arrangements to add the video component to the site, right? So we can show off the girls the authors are bringing with them.
Absolutely, Winnie. Got it all worked out. Millions will see me discussing the fine points of model photography with Gustav Bergman and Pierre Philippe.
Philippe.
Whatever.
Not too many fine points, Seth. We want the focus to be on the girls. They're going to be wearing the suits they model in the book, right?
Absolutely, Winnie. I'm sure we'll get dynamite ratings. Really dynamite.
Of course we will, Seth. And you'll be the new hero of online book programming. As will I, of course, as the behind-the-scenes and on-the-air mastermind of Book Radio's transformation into a formidable force to be reckoned with in the rapidly emerging niche of interactive audio programming.
What interactive audio programming niche?
Didn't I tell you about the real-time chat rooms I'm setting up to go with the interviews?
No.
Real-time chat rooms that will let our listeners talk back and forth with our guest authors, or, in this case, with the Sports Illustrated swimsuit models. Private chat. We get most of the fees we collect. The girls get the rest. Should be very profitable all around.
No, you didn't tell me.
Oh, it'll be great. Oh, trust me, Seth. Trust me.
This is Talking Books, and I'm Lowell Huntington.
And I'm Sarah Goldstein. Our guest today is Henry Hutchinson, author of Universal Laws of Development, a comprehensive treatment of the rules that describe how everything works, from atoms to people to the universe. Welcome to Talking Books.
Thank you, Sarah.
Can you summarize the thesis of Universal Laws of Development for us?
Well, it took me 30 years to discover these basic principles, principles that can explain everything. It might be hard to encapsulate all that in a single soundbite.
Try.
Well, if I had to do that, I'd say that the basic principle enunciated in my new book from Knopf, Universal Laws of Development, is this: power, complexity, and the possibility of freedom increase together.
Well, that was refreshingly jargon-free. What does it mean?
Well, as the complexity of a system increases, it becomes capable of more sophisticated behavior and therefore more able to exert control over itself and systems outside itself. This increases the possibilities of freedom, at least for the more complex system, but perhaps at the expense of freedom for other systems, which is where ethical considerations arise.
And you deal with these ethical considerations in Universal Laws of Development?
Indeed I do. They are the core of the book.
Are there aesthetic considerations involved as well?
Certainly. There's an entire chapter in Universal Laws of Development where I apply the principle of increased complexification to the theater, film, and books, concluding that books have a lot more potential for enlightenment and even entertainment than many in the flashier arts would admit.
Well, I'll admit I got a lot out of Universal Laws of Development, Henry. Thanks for writing it, and thanks for talking to us about it on Talking Books.
You're very welcome, Lowell.
Come again when you write another one, Henry.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Clear in the studio.
How did I do?
Very well, Henry. I don't think everything has ever been explained this clearly, at least not on our show.
You did fine, Henry. I think everyone's going to enjoy it.
When will this run?
Just as soon as we convert the tape to real audio and post it on our site. Give us your email and we'll let you know as soon as it's up.
Email?
Give us your business card and we'll call you.
Oh, great.
Good luck on the rest of your tour. Where are you going next?
Stanford, I think.
Well, great. Good luck. Thanks again.
Oh, you're very welcome. I don't often get to discuss my work with an interviewer who's actually read it.
Well, that's how we do it here.
I know. Thanks.
Sure. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Good afternoon. I'm Seth Wilkins.
And I'm Winnie Brown, and this is Book Radio.
Our guests today are Gustav Bergman and Pierre Philip, authors of The Making of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Issue. Welcome to Book Radio.
Ja, danke.
Merci, c'est Philippe.
Whatever.
Also in our studios are Brandy, Candy, and Mandy, who are some of the many delightfully attractive swimsuit models who appear in The Making of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Issue, as well, of course, in the actual Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Issue, of which this book is a chronicle and documentation. Those listeners with the foresight to be using the real video component of Real Player from Real Networks should really be getting an eyeful now as they become viewers as well as listeners and get a chance to see these lovely ladies right over their internet connection. Won't they, Seth?
Yes, they will, Winnie. Welcome, girls, to Book Radio.
Thank you, Seth. Winnie. I am so glad to be here, guys.
Well, we're really glad to have you girls. As you know, we will be interviewing Gustav and Pierre about their book. You girls will be chatting live with some of our lucky paying listeners on another channel on our website, where they will get to see you moving around in some of the outfits you wear in the book. I call that a real interactive literary experience. Wouldn't you, Winnie?
That's exactly what I'd call it, Seth.
Well, happy interacting, girls. We'll get back to you toward the end of the interview to get your point of view as well.
Oh, that's great. Oh, sounds like fun. Yeah.
So, Gustav, what's it like spending week after week in a South Pacific paradise taking pictures of mostly naked women?
Well, someone has to do it, nein.
Indeed, someone does. And you, Pierre, how did you manage to survive this ordeal?
Oh, c'est true. May I tell c'est true on this program?
Sure. We're journalists, first and foremost. We want the truth. We can handle the truth.
We were most of the time high on cocaine and, how you say, the quaalude. And of course, everyone has sex with everyone else on a regular basis.
Hmm, interesting. There wasn't much about that in the book.
There wasn't? Strange. I told those kids from Stamford, who actually wrote it, all about that. Guess they decide to leave it out.
You didn't write the book yourselves.
We took the pictures of those mothers. What our agent has to do to sell the book is up to him.
Why don't we listen in on what's happening with those models?
Ugh, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, give it to me hard. Ugh.
Well, our experiment in literary interactivity seems to be proceeding successfully.
I'll say. Our instant impressions readout shows a record level of impressions being had, made, whatever.
How have the sales of your book been going, Pierre?
Oh, très très bien. We are swamped whatever we were with the girls. It is very encouraging to see that a love of literature is alive in the mouths of America.
Indeed it is. and here on Book Radio as well. Let's check one more time to see if the girls are making full use of the awesome capacity of the internet to bring people together.
Oh, yeah.
Still seems to be working.
Well, thanks very much, Pierre and Gustav, and continued success promoting the making of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue from Warner Books. Of course, Time Warner publishes the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue as well, so you're getting a lot of synergy here, huh?
Lots of synergy, yeah.
Thanks again.
Bitte.
Oh, merci.
Read me the printout, big boy.
Our audited statement of impressions says that we had 800,000 impressions in the last 24 hours.
We are total stars, Seth. We are turning the book industry on its head, stirring the pot.
Mixing the metaphors. Yes, we're hot, hot, hot. Congratulations and thank you, Winnie. What do we do now?
Keep doing what we're doing. Keep to our game plan. Who do we have lined up for the next few shows?
Well, there's Dr. Carlton Beige, author of 4 Hours to More Orgasms, Fiona Fishkins, author of The Orgasm Makeover, and finally, Claire Prentice, who's written Orgasm on Wall Street. It's about investing in the sex industry.
One thing we need to do is strengthen our movie deal tie-ins. I want to get together with Melanie Porter at CAA to talk about our getting a cut on deals where we bring them authors of books that they can turn into movies.
Sounds good. Does it look like there'll be some time for us to get away for a while?
Get away? Are you kidding? And what do you mean by get away, anyway? You don't mean like for sex, do you? Oh, that is so beneath you, Seth. And I know I'm way beyond that myself.
Oh.
Our guest today is Jeremy Rifkin, who's just written The Biotech Century. Welcome to Talking Books, Jeremy.
Thank you, Sarah. What I want to say is unless we stop them, big corporations and big government are going to take control of the entire human genome, patent life itself, and gain control of the very process of planetary evolution.
Well, no one wants that. What do you propose we do?
A good way to start, of course, is to buy and read The Biotech Century, my new book. Then at least you'll know what the problem is, even if it's not clear what can be done about it.
Tell us about clones, Jeremy, and how they fit into the story you tell in The Biotech Century.
Clones are key, Sarah, because that's the way corporations will be able to make vast, unwarranted profits once they genetically engineer an animal to make valuable life-saving proteins in its milk or blood.
What's wrong with making valuable life-saving proteins, Jeremy?
Nothing per se. The problem is with the unconscionable profits that certain global biopharmaceutical agrocorporations will be making on bioinformatic data that belongs to all of us.
You want to nationalize the biotech sector?
Hold on, Lowell. I didn't say that. I just think we ought to think seriously about what's being done with our common biological inheritance.
Well, one way to start that thinking process is to buy and read The Biotech Century by Jeremy Rifkin. Thanks very much for talking with us today on Talking Books.
It was my pleasure, Sarah and Lowell.
So, Dr. Stern, what exactly would happen to this cheek cell of mine you've just scraped off if you were really going to clone me?
We would extract the DNA, insert it into a fertilized human egg cell that had its own DNA extracted, then activate the entire complex with a microjolt of electricity.
Kind of like Frankenstein?
Hardly, Miss Goldstein. We're talking about a precise, finely tuned, and exact scientific procedure, not the impromptu gyrations of a defrocked technician without tenure.
Sorry.
No problem. We just like to make it clear that we are businessmen and scientists, not crackpots.
Point taken.
May I take a scraping from you as well, Miss Goldstein?
Oh, I don't think that's necessary.
Well, it's not necessary, but it would allow us to provide you, as well as your friend Mr. Huntington, with a detailed genomic readout showing a great deal about your biological makeup.
Yeah, okay, sure, why not?
There, this won't hurt a bit.
Ow!
A small price to pay for so much new knowledge, eh?
Yeah, right.
So you'll be able to come up to L.A. for a taping next week?
Yes. I'm always glad to help inform the lay public about our important work. Call my secretary and she'll arrange a specific time.
Great. See you next week then, Dr. Stern.
Yes, until next week.
Dr. Stern seemed like a nice enough guy, don't you think?
I'm not so sure, Sarah. The background research I've done on him tells me that he's a high-powered, arrogant, money-grubbing little careerist. But he has an appointment at the University of California at Irvine, so I guess he must be okay, or they wouldn't have hired him.
Yeah, well, and he wasn't that gentle when he scraped my cheek cells out for his DNA exams. You don't think he'd use them to clone me, do you? Without my permission, I mean.
Why would he want to do that? Just to have a beautiful, sweet, intelligent, and talented companion all to himself? No way. There's no way he'd want to clone you, Sarah.
If he did clone me, it would just be an embryo. In 9 months, a baby. I didn't become beautiful, sweet, intelligent, and talented until I was in my teens. He'd have to wait a long time, and Dr. Stern strikes me as a very impatient man.
Just like I said, Sarah, there's no way Dr. Stern will be cloning you from that cell sample you gave him.
Inserting genetic material into evacuated cell. Ah, there. Removing pipette. Applying microelectrodes. Aha! Setting microamperage. Ready? Electricity flowing. Stop! Okay. Beginning microscopic observation of fertilized and shocked cell. Nucleus is dividing. Cell is dividing. Two cells. Still dividing. Four cells. 8 cells. 16. Yes!
Is it a success, Dr. Stern?
So far, Iris, so far.
Is the Accelotron substrate working?
It's working great. The embryo is dividing at a remarkable rate. We need to get one of those surrogates in here right away. That's essential. Can I trust you to handle this, Iris?
Absolutely, Dr. Stern. I'll have one here within the hour.
That might be too late. We need her here now. There's no time to waste.
Well, we can't just grab an unsuspecting random woman out of the hallway and trust her to carry the most important experiment in the history of human biology to term, can we?
No, you're right. We need a woman who understands the demands and the implications of being surrogate to the world's first advanced clonal reproductive unit. ACRU. Sarah 2. Just like that pretty actress, but so much more. So much better.
Okay. I'll volunteer, Doctor.
You, Iris?
Yes, me, Doctor. As your postdoc lab assistant, as a published researcher in my own right, I know more about what we're about than anyone except you. And as a woman, I can do what you can't. Carry this experiment to term.
Are you sure? I don't want to coerce you.
Hey, Doc, with the Accelotron injections, it's only going to be a 3-day pregnancy, huh? Let's do it.
Yeah, all right. Go down to the implantation room and get prepped. I'll bring the embryo down in a few minutes.
Great. Someday, I guess, they will call me Mother of Nations.
Yes, Iris. I think they will.
The fish is really good here, Melanie. Try it. Well, if you like fish, of course.
Yes, I know, Winnie. I've been here once or twice, but thank you.
I caught your show with the models the other night, Seth. A breakthrough in internet broadcasting for sure. You know, I almost called them myself, but I had to finish up this deal with Disney, you know, and I had to focus. But it was way cool.
Thank you, Michael. We do what we can.
Can we order and get to work?
Well, yes. Waiter!
Hello, my name's Heather. I'll be your waitress. Our specials today are...
That's enough, thank you. We'll have the 4 fish flambé and 2 bottles of your best Gewürztraminer. Fast would be okay. We're important people and need to get out of here and back to our plush offices really soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what do you want us to do for you?
Well, basically...
We're multimedia pioneers, Melanie. We're experimenting. We're making breakthroughs. We can handle the creative. We can handle the technical. We want you at CAA to handle the financial aspects for us. Get us deals in Hollywood and New York. Represent us to book publishers, internet sites, film and television production companies, action figure syndicators.
Synergize us, syndicate us, free us to do our best work while you make us rich.
You know, we could do that. We could really do that.
If we wanted to.
Well, don't jerk us around. Do you want to?
On the basis of what we've seen, which is mainly your interview with 2 incoherent foreigners, while mostly naked bimbos cavort on camera to the perverse whims of your audience of infantile adolescents, who were, of course, paying for the privilege. I think we can reach an accommodation. Yes.
I concur.
Okay, I'll drink to that.
Great, thank you.
No, thank you.
I'm very glad to welcome to Book Radio today Elizabeth Wurtzel, previously best known as the author of Prozac Nation. And now we think she's going to be even better known as the author of Bitch, in praise of difficult women.
Welcome, Liz, to Book Radio.
Yeah, well, sure. Okay.
I really like the jacket photo, Liz. You look real, literary.
Yeah, well, sure. Okay.
Tell us, Elizabeth, before we get started with Bitch, who is that tall stranger in the bright orange jumpsuit sitting next to you with his hand in your lap?
He's Timothy McVeigh.
The Timothy McVeigh?
Yeah.
May I ask, what drew you, a highly, some might even say, overeducated, self-described, depressed maniac, to this mass-murdering, right-wing, loony, political terrorist?
I have sympathy for him. I feel really sorry for him. I think he is so despised, and I think he probably did it, but there's no way that he got a fair trial. I just wondered how he felt. And I found that he had a certain strange dignity in refusing to apologize or to be, I don't know, this sort of sniveling, I'm so sorry person.
You don't think it has to do with a shared condition of emotional immaturity, not to mention mutual feelings of unexpressed rage?
Fuck you.
Is it fair to say, Elizabeth, that Tim's refusal to apologize for his actions, however grotesque and harmful to others that they may have been, evokes in you the same kind of sympathy you feel for all the women you discuss in Bitch? Women who share his tendency to do just what they feel like, regardless of the consequences and regardless of who doesn't like it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think our listeners would like to know more about the cover photograph with your left breast prominently.
I think our listeners would like to hear what Tim has to say. Tim!
Yeah.
Well, how did you and Elizabeth get together?
The bitch sent me her book, sent her agent to prison, asked to interview me, then I read this on the net, Amazon.com. So if you get an interview with him, you'll pursue it? Wurtzel. Oh, yeah, I'm not saying that what he did was good. I think it's horrible, but what on earth happened? He flipped. It's a weird story.
So you resonated to her sympathy for you?
Shit, no. I wanted to meet the babe with the big tits.
So did it work out?
I'm having his baby.
Well, that should be a highlight of the Christmas season in New York.
Don't take everything so seriously, guys. This Tim character is just a figment of my fevered literary imagination. But I am good, aren't I? Bringing him alive for you and your listeners? All those listeners who might want to buy Bitch in praise of difficult women?
Oh, yes, Elizabeth. We are very impressed. You truly are a wonderkind. Say, are you married in real life? I mean, without counting virtual spouses like Tim here.
Tim is gone, Winnie. He's off to hang with that big rabbit Harvey or whatever. And I am not married. I'm too manic, too depressed, too horny, too smart, too rich, too troubled, too into drugs to be married, let alone able to get out of my own head long enough to empathize with some man. Not that I don't long desperately to be married. I'm 30 years old already. Hey, as you probably already know, if you've read the extensive publicity materials that came with the book, which I very nicely grace with that black and white photo of...
Oh, yeah, the picture.
That's all the time we have today, Elizabeth. Lots of luck with Bitch in praise of difficult women. You weren't difficult at all. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. Okay.
Stay in the studio.
So, Liz, where are you going now? You want to get a drink or something?
Fuck off.
This is Book Talk, and I'm Sarah Goldstein. Our guests today are the co-authors of The Clones Among Us, True Tales of the Post-Human Future, Dr. Edward Stern, Professor of Bioinformatics at the University of California at Irvine, and founder and president of the Orange Coast Clone Center, and Dr. Iris Sato, Research Director at this same OCCC.
Welcome, doctors, to Talking Books.
Thank you again. Glad to be here.
Yes, me too.
Since you were here last week, Dr. Stern, explaining to our listeners the basics of human cloning, a lot has happened. For one thing, your new book, The Clones Among Us, True Tales of the Post-Human Future, has been published by Warner Books, I think it is.
Warner Books, yes.
How has the book been received?
It's flying off the shelves in spite of the orchestrated efforts of my enemies, the enemies of progress, to stifle my First Amendment rights to free expression.
Like what, Doctor?
Like editorials in a so-called prestigious New England Journal of Medicine and the allegedly distinguished Journal of American Medical Association brutally attacking me as a, quote, modern-day Dr. Frankenstein and a, quote, out-of-control lunatic without regard for the dignity of the human species and the sanctity of human life. And those are among the nicer things they said about me.
I read The Clones Among Us, True Tales of the Post-Human Future, to prepare for the show, and it seemed to me that you have set out, very clearly, the choices we have as individuals and as a society, now that bioinformatic technology has given us the ability to design our, well, selves.
Thank you, Lowell. It's so rare that an interviewer has read our book, let alone understood it and appreciated it.
No problem.
So, are you seriously worried that efforts will be made to stop you from continuing the research you document in The Clones Among Us, True Tales of the Post-Human Future?
Well, we are seriously worried, but we have taken steps not to be deterred. Serious steps against a serious threat to our free expression as scientists.
What have you done?
Go get her and bring her in, Iris. May I present to you Mr. Huntington and Mrs. Goldstein, the first example of the very clones among us we have been discussing, Sarah 2.
It's me.
Not exactly, Miss Goldstein. We started with an evacuated egg cell and the cheek cell you were so thoughtful to provide me with during your visit to our lab. We have made certain modifications, improvements, upgrades to your basic genomic information.
But you took my cheek cell 2 weeks ago, and that clone is an adult woman who is almost my own age.
One of the many inventions for which Dr. Stone will be awarded his Nobel Prize is the Accelotron process, trademark, which lets us speed up the developmental cycle of our clones.
I'm very impressed. But Sarah 2 looks a little younger than Sarah 1.
Very good, Lowell. I am only 23. Yet perfect in every way you can possibly imagine. Are you now? Yes, sister, I am, and I hope no touch of jealousy will mar our time together. We have so much to teach each other, so much help to share, so much love to hold together. Maybe. What did you add to me, Doctor? What have you done?
Perfected you, Sarah. Enlarged your capabilities. Made you potentially immortal, wiped out any chance you will develop Alzheimer's disease, osteoporosis, multiple sclerosis, breast cancer. We don't even know how many times we've actually increased your intelligence. We think at least 5 times. We even have made you a little funnier. There are some surprises we want to save for later.
I'm not sure I want to be perfect.
Don't worry, Sarah. It isn't you that's perfect. It's your clone.
She has a killer smile, Sarah.
Thank you, Lowly. You're kind of cute, too.
This is where Sarah 1 and I live, Sarah 2. Make yourself at home.
Thanks, Lowell. Nice place. Do you live here, too, Sarah 1? Don't call me Sarah 1. My name is Sarah. I think you need a new name, Sarah 2. Now do I, Sarah 1. What would you suggest, given your rather limited mental capabilities?
Now, hold on, please. Who wants a drink or other recreational stimulant? I'll get something. Why don't you two just sit down and chat amongst yourselves? What happened?
I had to defend myself, Lowell. That clone went nuts. You're not me, she screamed, and came after me with that letter opener. I put my arm up to protect myself, and somehow it twisted the blade back onto her. I think her carotid artery. Look at all that blood. It's too bad, but now we can be together without her.
Yeah, well, I think we need to call somebody, like 911.
Of course we do. You want to, or should I?
I'll do it. You certainly seem calm after an attempt on your life and, you know, like all that blood.
I'm a professional. I've been through similar situations on stage and on the screen, don't forget.
Yeah, but this is real.
You'd better call, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Can you send an ambulance to 555 Forest Drive? We've got a stabbing injury with a lot of blood. Yes, thank you. Goodbye. They're coming.
They don't need to rush, Lowell.
Why not?
I just checked her pulse. She doesn't have one. The world's most wonderful clone is dead.
I guess I can just call you plain old Sarah again, huh?
Yes, Lowell.
The police and the district attorney's office ruled that Sarah 2's death was self-defense, so there won't be any trial or anything.
Of course they did. I think I'm ready to go back to work whenever you are, Lowell.
You do? Well, it would let us take advantage of the mountains of publicity that have happened over this whole thing.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
It probably won't hurt our ratings.
It hasn't hurt how much I want you, Lowell.
No? Well, show me then. You're more spectacular than ever, Sarah.
Shut up and kiss me, you fool.
This isn't good, Winnie. With all the hullabaloo over the killing of Sarah's clone, well, those creeps at Talking Books have gotten millions in free publicity. How can we compete with them now?
You are so limited in your thinking, Seth, and you have so little faith in me. Don't you think I'd been working on this situation from day one? Don't you think I'd have a counterplan for their cynical use of that poor clone to boost their ratings?
You do?
Of course!
What is it?
We will break the case wide open.
What case? The DA said it was self-defense.
Right. You think I'd take that lying down without looking into it myself with the help of certain strategically placed operatives?
I guess not.
I didn't. I haven't. And you know what I've discovered.
What?
The dead clone wasn't a clone at all. She was the original Sarah Goldstein.
No!
Definitely yes!
Why haven't we seen that in the media?
The DA, Stephen Stevenson, is running for state attorney general. He needs the support of the powerful bioinformatics industry. You think he's going to jeopardize his chances of moving up by exposing them to the financial liability and public scrutiny they'd have if it were revealed that their prize clone, Sarah 2, was a murderous mutant and not the boon to humanity they're pitching her as?
I don't suppose he would.
Hence the cover-up.
But that means our arch-rival Lowell Huntington is living with a woman he thinks is his girlfriend, but is, in reality, a very dangerous clone who actually killed that girlfriend.
Indeed it does.
He may be in danger, too.
And we certainly don't want anything to happen to our chief rival for the domination of the internet airwaves, now do we, Seth?
Do you mean we're not going to tell him?
We're not going to tell anyone, Seth. No one at all. We will let nature take its course. Someone needs to teach Lowell Huntington that it's not a good idea to fool with Mother Nature, or to get too close to the bleeding edge to educate his listeners. A little knowledge, as we see, can be a dangerous, if lovely, thing.
I guess.
So, how was I?
Unbelievably hot, Sarah.
Was I?
Oh, yeah. Ever since you fought off that clone, you've been just incredibly erotic.
Maybe. I think it was a growth experience for me. Helped me mature, you know? And I can express myself physically with you better now.
Well, whatever it was, it's great.
Thanks. By the way, I want to set up a roundtable discussion for Talking Books, where we bring in an astrophysicist conversant with string theory, a biometrician knowledgeable on current trends in population dynamics, an MBA CFO from a Fortune 100 biotech company, and some estheticians and photojournalists to discuss the future of fashion photography from a psychobioastrophysical perspective.
Well, sounds like a good idea in principle, but Maybe it'll be too much for some of our listeners.
Too much? You don't think our listeners can handle the multiple, overlapping, synergistically coordinated paradigms implicit in a wide-ranging and deeply rooted conversation like the one I'm proposing?
Well, I guess some of them could, but...
It's not that you don't think you couldn't handle it.
What do you mean, Sarah?
I mean, maybe you're not able to keep up with me as I attempt to penetrate, amalgamate, and coordinate all branches of human learning and experience into a transcendent exploration of what it means to be human, or to rise above being human to a new level of understanding and being.
I think I can keep up with you. I think I'd like to see a transcendent exploration of those things you said.
Would you, Lowell? Or are you just saying that to flatter and placate me so I don't stop giving you what you want, what you crave, what you now obviously so desperately require from me in bed? From me, you're so accessible, uber slut.
Well, I don't think that's exactly how I'd put it.
Put it however you want, Mr. Paragon of yesterday's dominant species. I don't think you can cut it for where I'm going, and I think you need to be eased off the scene any minute now.
Eased off of what scene?
The evolutionary scene, little Lowell. The survival of the fittest scene, human boy.
You know, not only don't you fuck like Sarah, you don't really talk like Sarah. I'm beginning to think you may not be Sarah.
Brilliant deduction, Holmes. The last you'll be making, I'm afraid. That's just a human expression for me, though. That I'm afraid. There is nothing in this world that frightens me. Certainly not you with your weakness and stupidity.
I'm not frightened either, Sarah, too, or whoever you are. Intrigued, maybe. Amused, maybe. Angry that you killed the real Sarah. Convinced you'll never get away with it. Whatever your legal status.
Amused? Maybe you mean aroused. Maybe you'd like to spend your last moments alive, enjoying my very ample charms. The charms you've been so highly praising of late.
I don't think so, Sarah, too. I think my next step is to call 911 and turn you in, not anything else.
Come on, Lowell. This is all for you. Right now. Here, Lowell. Touch me here, Lowell. Kiss me, Lowell. It's good like this, isn't it? You like this, don't you? It's your last breath. Enjoy it, baby.
Iris, Sarah 2 has sent me email at last. Since she couldn't before, when everyone was watching her.
What does it say, Dr. Stern?
She wants us to recreate Lowell Huntington, but with a few improvements, of course.
Well, did she specify the improvements?
Did she indeed? She wants the intelligence brought up to almost her own level, eliminate the standard set of degenerative diseases, fix the cheekbones, more physical endurance, stamina, better eyesight, higher testosterone levels, snip out the mood disorders, and get rid of the hair on his back.
Check, check, and check. When does she want him delivered?
There seems to have been some sort of sexual accident involving the original Lowell Huntington. She seems to have been able to dispose of the body okay, but since their talk show, you know, the one we were on, is taping again later this week, she wanted him there in 2 days.
Well, now that we have the titanium womb trademark operating smoothly, we won't have to rush around looking for some human woman to do the gestation. I think we can have it ready in 48 hours. Now, where did you put those cheek cells we got from the old Lowell Huntington?
I'm sure they're here somewhere. Let me check our cell storage.